it was such a family victory when the Dixie Chicks recorded one of our songs. It was a song that him and I wrote together, and that was just so cool. And we wrote that without anybody in mind. We just wanted to write a song together, and my publisher went like old school. He pounded the pavement and he got that song over to the Chicks, and they did a wonderful job on it.
That's Maya Sharp. I'm Jamie Green, and this is Trading Fours. Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of Trading Fours. I hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a good weekend. And we've got Maya Sharp in the house today. Maya Sharp has a brand new album called Mercy Rising that is already out. Came out on May 7th, just a couple days ago. I've had the delightful experience of getting to preview it, and it's really good, really, really good. So it was a great pleasure to talk to Maya. She has done a lot, not only on writing her own music and performing it, but also as a music producer and as a songwriter. She's been covered by people like, oh, I don't know, Bonnie Raitt, The Chicks, Lisa Loeb, Trisha Yearwood, Art Garfunkel, Cher, and many, many, many more. So I had such a good time talking to Maya. She dialed in from her house in Nashville, a native California who recently made a move to Nashville, and we're going to talk all about that. We're going to talk about the album. We're going to talk about the songwriting craft. So much to discuss. So let's get started. Here's my conversation with Maya Sharp. Maya, thanks so much for being on Trading Fours. I really, you know, I tell people I like your stuff, and I loved your album.
Oh, thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, I'm just, I wish I could crack the code on how to be a great songwriter, right? Because it's everybody tries to write songs, and most of us can't do it well. But you can, and obviously it's a testament to you, not only for your own stuff, but writing for other folks and stuff too. And this album was great, and it was, you know, it was raw and personal and beautiful. So I know what kind of came, the impetus was moving to Nashville, correct? Give me a little background.
Yeah, there were a lot of changes happened at once. The end of 18, beginning of 19, really just about anything that could have changed found a way to do that. My personal life changed. My marriage of 21 years ended. I moved to Nashville out of California, where I had lived my entire life. And I really kind of thought that I was just going to be a California girl forever. And then it just made sense. Little shove out of Los Angeles, a little pull here to Nashville. Finally, you know, the stars aligned, and I made the move, and just, you know, trying to adapt to all of those new aspects of life at one time was definitely a challenge. And I'm not a big changer. I don't usually, you know, it takes me a while to even handle like one thing at a time that has changed after many years. So this was a challenge for sure. And life, I'm not sure what the phrase would be, but it took the writing and the recording of the album to really help me through. And the actual work on the album is what really helped me to get on the other side of, you know, some of the pain and the, you know, the struggle of, you know, all of those changes.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. Right. And I assume too, like, you know, like you said, change isn't easy at any age. It just isn't. And California, you know, a native California, that's kind of a rarity, right? It seems like everybody moves to California, right? And I just had to.
Jason, yeah, and it's really different.
No, I can only imagine.
I was just saying. Well, you know, along the lines of, you know, what you said earlier about how everybody wants to be a songwriter and, you know, what's the code on being a good songwriter. First of all, thank you for asking me that as if I know. But really, it's just. it's just the doing it. I mean, it's just logging those flight, you know, the flight hours of writing and being patient with yourself and letting yourself off the hook if those first handful to 50 songs kind of suck. You know, that's okay. That's on your way to something else. So I think really the code is just, you just have to plow through until, you know, and you know, until the stuff that you're really proud of starts to show up.
So did you, and I know that your dad was a musician that wrote music too. Did you glean stuff from, and did you glean stuff from him or did you just forge your own way?
Oh, absolutely. He was the first person that I wrote with. I'm sure he was the first music that I heard. He is just such a craftsman. He's such a like easygoing guy too. He never pushed it on me, but anytime I had a question, he was right there with all the answers. He showed me around the studio. He just, his song sensibility really, really rubbed off on me. And we still write together sometimes. I mean, it's been a while. It was such a family victory when the Dixie Chicks recorded one of our songs. Home was a song that him and I wrote together. And that was just so, so cool. And we wrote that without anybody in mind. We just wanted to write a song together. And my publisher went like old school. He pounded the pavement and he got that song over to the Chicks. And they did a wonderful job on it. But yeah, he was and still is just a really, really thoughtful songwriter.
That's great. Now, you know, a theme of this podcast, your episode, I think 64 now, and it's amazing how often it, not every musician I talk to, but so many musicians where it's a family.
Oh, really?
Dynamic. So many people, like my dad, or in fact, my last guest I just had on, I was kind of jealous. I kind of want to be in their family because she's a jazz pianist and her husband is a jazz bassist and their 18-year-old son is a drummer. So this last...
They have a trio.
They do. And they're playing in their basement and they're putting it up on YouTube and it's fabulous. And I was like, well, I'm a schmo. You know, my younger son, all he wants to do is play video games. My wife, I love her dearly, but she's not musical. And my one musical kid, he's in college up at the University of Nebraska. So I just like wasted time during quarantine and like watched Tiger King and did dumb things. And I really wanted to do much cooler, funner things, like, you know, jamming with the band. So
that is so not fair that when everybody else is locked down, you know, all alone, trying to play their songs alone, they have a freaking family band in the basement and it looks like they have like a full on show. That's so unfair.
Yeah. Well, I invited myself for Christmas. So
Well, it should be opened up by then. Well, you know, along the family lines, I mean, who knows like what is, you know, really passed along in the genes, but I think another component of that is that you are growing up in a house that acknowledges music as a job. Like that is a viable choice. Nobody could ever tell me to go out and find a real job. Like if I wanted to write songs, if I wanted to play saxophone, if I wanted to do something in this field, they were always there. And I think a lot of homes, you might have a musical kid, but they don't really have that encouragement. And so that also might be a part of how families are musical, you know, because it was always okay for me. I mean, they were right there. Right. In fact, I probably, like, if I told them I wanted to be a lawyer, they probably would have been like, really? But don't you want to, like, okay, maybe you can do law, like, you know, on the side. But, you know, don't you want to do music? You know, they were really, you know, they were really there for anything
That's
that
great.
I chose. But yeah, I think it's just helpful to have that in the family for that reason.
So were they sad when you said, hey, I'm picking up my bags and I'm going to Nashville? I'm moving, you know, 1,500 miles away.
Well, it's interesting. They had just moved. So we all lived in Los Angeles. They were in the Valley. I was over in like the Miracle Mile area. So we were probably like, well, in LA, you know, 5 miles apart, but like 45 minutes, right?
Right.
but they had just moved to Central California, which is where we were all from originally. We moved to LA from Visalia when I was like 5. So they had just moved back up to Central Cal. So it wasn't like I was moving away from just around the corner, you know? And in a way, I mean, a side, you know, from the pandemic, in a way I've been seeing them just as often, because when I go back to California, I hang out for a couple of days. So it's actually more of like a meaningful hang than just, you know, a drive-by for, you know, a lunch or something. So far it's been fine.
That's great. No, yeah. Having family in your life is so important anytime. And during the pandemic, I think it's been even more important. My 88-year-old mom, she's been great because like she lived through the Depression and Second World War and mm-hmm. polio outbreaks where they closed the pool and all. So she was very even keel, which was good. Anyway, so
she's seen some stuff, man.
Yes, she has. She's back at the gym, Maya. She goes to the gym like 3 or 4 days a week. She doesn't mess around.
Okay, now that stuff is definitely in your genes. So that's really wonderful that you have that. And it's great to hear that she survived this. After surviving all of that, and then, you know, if she were to get sick with COVID, that would
No, we had to do the, you know, when we'd come over through the, you know, the window kind of thing, just to be really safe, because, you know, you don't want to kill your mom, right? You just don't. So
I think that's a pretty good, you know, slogan.
Oh my goodness. So this is going to go out on May 9th. So this album will have just come out. Mercy Rising. I'm here in Kansas City. Wherever you get your music, I know everywhere you can get it anywhere now, right? It's not like the old days where we would grow up and go have to pick it up. And so I'm curious about this. Is there a couple tracks that if somebody wants to learn about you off this album that you think is a real kind of a way to kind of get to know you? Like, what's a great track for somebody?
Ooh, this is a hard one. So you're gonna ask me to choose?
Well, you know, it's not like you don't have to kill all the other songs. I'm just saying, give me a couple songs that...
Kill Your Darlings.
Yeah.
Songs that that will give you a good idea of maybe what the rest of the album is about, or what, exactly, you know, the vibe of the rest of the album. Well, I think that would take a tour of a couple of them if everybody's up for it.
Absolutely.
I would say Whatever We Are.
Mm-hmm.
And then You'll Know Who Knows You. I think those are good ones that are going to show you. And they're really different from each other, but there's a thread running through those two songs that I think kind of grabs the rest of the album. So if you like those two songs, you'll probably like the album.
No, I think those are great. I liked all of them. What was the song that you had where it's like, you're a nice girl and I'm going to ruin it for you kind of line? I was listening to that the other day.
Nice girl. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you're going to make some nice girl miserable someday.
Right. That's a great line.
Thanks.
Where did that come from?
Do you want to hear the story?
Yeah. I want to hear the story.
That's so funny that you said that. That is the most absolutely direct word from word taken from life line in the entire album. As we were splitting up and kind of redefining our friendship, my now ex-wife and I were sitting on the couch and she looked right at me and she goes, you know what? It's okay. You're going to make some nice girl miserable someday. And first I just kind of like waited and she goes, oh my God, you're going to write a song out of that, aren't you? You just tag that line in your head and you're going to go write a song. I'm like, of course I am. That's a great line. Thank you so much. I mean, it landed, it hurt. Great. But yes, I'm going to write a song. And now, and then we laughed our asses off, which I think was another kind of sign of like, we could go to a dark place and be in a very heavy moment. And then the next minute, you know, we're laughing. And this song sounds like, you know, if you don't know which way I sway, you know, right. The song sounds like I'm saying that to somebody else, but it was said, I was the recipient of that line.
Right. No, it's a great line. Well, it caught my ear, right? I was like, that's a cool line. Cool. Like,
yeah.
And you got the final say on it. Cause you get to do the song on it, right?
Yeah. And she, you know, she totally loves it. I just did a post on Facebook and I credited her for it. And she's like, hey, nice Facebook post. Like she's all into it. So that's good.
No, that's great. Well, you have worked with so many cool people. We talked a little bit about the Chicks and my wife, obviously I like the Chicks too. My wife is a huge Chicks they're fan.
So cool.
And so, you know, and they write great songs on their own too. So that's gotta be quite a coup for you. They're like, yeah, we're going to do your song too. Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Art Garfunkel, Bonnie Raitt, which one of these you want to talk about? I mean, there's a million of them, but these two kind of just stand out because these are another, you know, just great, great singers, great musicians that have had careers for decades.
Oh man. I found the Holy Grail. Like that was just such a moment when I heard that she was going to do three of my songs, and our relationship just like kept on unfolding. You know, she asked me to come into the studio and recreate some of the harmonies that I had done on my versions of those songs that she heard. So I came in and did that. She asked me if I wanted to sit in with her on a show that she was doing like that week that we were in the studio. Then she asked me to like open a bunch of shows for her. We're really good friends now. It just keeps on getting just cooler. And every time, I mean, aside from being able to play to her audience, which is just a room full of people that are just like me, like right. I just walk out there like, hey, I'm just a fellow Bonnie fan. It's really nice to meet you. And it was just such a fit. And but then, you know, aside from that, just honor of that, I got to see her perform every night. And I had seen her many, many times, but this was, you know, I got to see her like 50 times. And every single time, man, she just like, she has this thing down. Like she can swagger and show you her strength with zero arrogance. Mm-hmm. It's never overconfident. It's just a confident woman who gets out there and kicks ass.
Yeah, she does.
Every single night, man. And then she asked me to like sit in on freaking like Angela Montgomery.
Right.
And my very first reaction, I'm so glad that she didn't, you know, really listen to me. My very first was like, Bonnie, they don't want to hear me sing that. I want to hear you sing that. Like, shut up, me. You know, I got to go out there and sing with her. Which is great.
So is that like a pinch me moment? Does it just kind of overwhelm you? Do you like go home that night and kind of be like, holy crap, that just happened?
Yeah, there was a series of those. I mean, I'm standing in the wings watching her from the side. I'm on stage. I glance over to the wings and she's like, oh. I mean, there's just like, what is even happening right now? We're just like on a hike, you know, talking about, you know, just, you know, regular thing. She's as earthy and humble and cool and yet really strong as you think she is. It's really great.
No, it's great. And I'm not going to read it. I don't want to embarrass you, but I'll put in the show notes her, what she said about this album. I mean, you should get this framed. Right.
I have it in my phone. I can look at it. I don't want to put that stuff on the walls. You know, see what happens on my walls.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's cool. No, that's Goosey funny.
Kyle's and like ode to coffee.
Hey, I'm drinking some now. I had to turn my camera off, but I am. That's so great.
Sure, it's coffee.
I'm old now, Maya. I have to behave myself. If I had a beer or something, I'd have to take a nap, and that wouldn't be good. So what do you think about, so you've been in Nashville, obviously we can't really discuss the COVID era because, you know, it's all shut down and not fun, but although I feel like Nashville opened up a little sooner than a lot of places. But what do you like about it? What is it in fact that, you know, I think you're like the sixth person I've had on from Nashville. I've had so many. Damon Johnson was the last one who, you know, was in Brother Kane and now he's out on his own. I've had John Salloway on. I've had engineers on from Nashville. Tell me about your experience with Nashville.
Well, I mean, you can really feel that it is a songwriter-centric place more than Los Angeles was. And just the kind of writing that they do here, what happens to the song after it's written. It just felt like more of a fit for how I write. And the community sense here, and I don't think that's LA's fault. I think just because in Nashville, you can really like hop over to your friend's house in just a couple minutes. You can't like, you know, swing over to the club or whatever. Like it's just kind of easier to gather here. I mean, you know, before.
Right.
And I did have a little bit of time. I'd moved here at the beginning of 19. So I did have a little bit of time before the lockdown, and I got to feel what I already suspected, because I have been traveling here to write like a week or two at a time, 3 to 5 times a year for probably 20 years. So I had already, you know, started a circle of friends and, you know, writers that I like to work with. And it also, that circle expands faster here. There's something about it. I feel like people are more likely to like just introduce people that they like to other people that they like. And then there's actually a writing session that follows. And there's a version of that in Los Angeles. It just moves a lot slower. Like you meet somebody that you really want to write with, and then bam, 3 months later, you have a writing session, you know.
Right,
here,
right.
It just kind of seems to flow a little faster. And I don't know, the community sense just seems a little stronger here. And that could just be the geography, but I definitely did have a chance to feel that before. And so, so happy that I went into the studio end of 19 and just barely got it tracked with humans in a room real time before we wouldn't have been able to do that.
Yeah. So are you all vaccinated up? Are you getting ready to get out in the world again soon?
Well, by the time this airs, I will be fully vaxxed. Yeah. I'm half now.
Isn't it funny how like when I got my second vaccine, I was pretty emotional about it. I mean, it's been a long 14 months.
Sure. Oh, I'm sure I'm going to feel that. I felt a little bit of that after the first one. And I've had kind of a funky journey with this. I mean, we all have, but there's been some extra. I got the virus in March of last year. It was like very early on. A tornado came through my neighborhood here in Nashville. Hey, welcome to Nashville.
Yeah. Welcome to the Midwest, Maya. Hey,
I know. Oh my God. Well, of course you're like in the Wizard of Oz land over there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like spoke earthquake because I lived in California for so long, but like, what the hell? A tornado? Like the street lamp just flew away. Like, what's even happening? So a tornado came March 2nd or 3rd. And then there were all of the, and it was like, we knew about the virus, but there wasn't really a protocol yet. And it was just kind of still over there. And we weren't really changing our lives. So after the tornado hit, there were all of these benefit shows to help people who didn't have insurance or whatever. And we're out every night at these shows. Like, and when I say we, I mean like everyone in the community is like hugging it out.
Right.
It's the first week in March. And so I got it. Like I woke up like on the 10th of March with it, and it was brutal. Pneumonia, the whole, just like wiped me out for a month. And I'm healthy. I've been the healthiest person in the room my whole life. I don't smoke. I take care of myself. I eat well. And it just like annihilated me. And I have friends that admit to like, oh, I slept walk and ate a bag of chips, like, and they were like asymptomatic,
right?
That was a hard time, but it was a hard enough time to give me antibodies that lasted a year. So when I went in to get my first shot, I still had the antibodies. So
really?
I already had this like, I'm probably okay, but you know, like, should I wait? Because sometimes the antibodies, it's harder. If you have antibodies, you might have a harder reaction. Anyway, but yeah, it's still going to be emotional to be finished with the process of the vaccine. But I felt a little more protected than the average bear for a while, because I've known that I've had the antibodies and they've seemed to be like holding up for some reason.
Well, you know, it's I don't know if, do we want to talk about tornadoes more, or do we want to talk about global pandemic? You know, it's so funny. I grew up in Nebraska. And so you're just, you know, you're used to what you're used to, right? Like you grow up in it and you're like, you know, my dad's house blew away when he was a baby and they had to rebuild, you know, like, and you're like, oh yeah, that seems like right. And I've been in, I was a Boy Scout and we had tornadoes that touched down, like blew everybody's tent away and like, you know, kind of terrifying at the time.
Yeah, that's very terrifying.
But I will tell you the natural disaster that scared me the most when I, my wife first got out of law school, she got a job out in Arizona and we had, it was actually on the California-Arizona border, but in the middle of the night, it was an earthquake. Mm-hmm. And I'd never experienced that before. And that scared the bejesus out of me. Right. Cause it's the unknown. You're like, what is this? What is happening? Why, you know?
Yeah. And you don't have any warning.
No.
And the sounds that it can make.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, you know, and you know, it's kind of different every time. It's eerie as hell. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so, that's funny. And then your other point, you know, I think, I tell people this too, and it's true, whether you're a schmo like me, a total hack that just plays for fun, or whether you're, you know, I don't know, Paul McCartney, the best part about being a musician is the collaboration you do with other people.
Yeah.
It's the friendships that you develop. It's that community. And I think, you know, there's probably from the outside, it's a little bit more things that it's more cutthroat. And there's an element of that, but I really, especially in this town, it's a lot of it. It's just like, how can we help each other? And I'm there for you. And I,
yeah,
you know, and I think everybody misses that desperately, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, I definitely feel a lot of that here in Nashville. And I felt some back in Los Angeles too. And I also want to add that a part of, you know, one of the pro column things about moving here is that the people that I write with regularly in Los Angeles all make a point to come here a few times a year. So it's not like I was going to end those relationships. So they're also a part of the community. And like LA, I'm learning that Nashville really is whatever you make of it. Like my version of Nashville is just going to be my circle, you know? And yeah, it seems to be, I do feel like we're all trying to help each other, because if any one of us, you know, really get a break, it could help all of us, you know?
Right. Well, it's a delight to get to talk to you. Like I said, I really loved your album. Oh, it's amazing. So I'm buying it. I'm not just going to not listen to it now that I'm done with the interview. And I hope you
the physicals are also available and there is vinyl on the way.
Oh my gosh. So I have my parents' turntable.
All right.
And I've got like 300 of my dad's jazz albums, and I have all my, I never got rid of my albums. I don't know how I managed, but I kept them all. So I'm totally doing that.
Yes. Yeah. I just got hooked on vinyl now. In fact, when I moved here, my like central of the living room is a vinyl station instead of a fireplace, because I don't have a fireplace. And I was like, well, who needs a fireplace? Here we go. It's like all of the, and I stole a bunch of albums from my folks. I don't know if they know that.
Well, they do now.
They do now. Okay. Worth it. Yeah. Just some like great, like all genres. Anyway. Yeah.
So I'm always curious this, since it's not your music, maybe it'll be a little less difficult. Let's say that for some reason I'm in Nashville and I come, what are you going to spend for me?
Oh, what am I going to spend?
Yeah. We're going to have a cocktail because it's the evening and you're going to play. What are you going to put on for me?
I'm going to put on, it's going to be a little eclectic. I hope you're up for it.
That's what I love.
I'm thinking about the stack that is next to my turntable right now. I had some friends over, everybody, all of them were vaxxed and we were socially distant. I played Jason Isbell,
mm-hmm.
Lord Huron,
mm-hmm.
Elton John, Madman Across the Water.
Yeah.
And Bon Iver.
So I knew all those, but Bon Iver, I'm gonna have to check that out.
Oh my God, you got it. Yes, you have to listen to Bon Iver.
All right, I'll put it on my list.
Yeah, two words, Bon Iver.
Yeah, real quick before you go. So Jason, he's a brave soul on Twitter. Like he takes no prisoners, right? Like he just like, they're like, hey Jason, I used to like you, but now you're, and he's like, nah, I didn't want you to be my fan anyway, right? Like he just doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's pretty fearless.
Yeah, I heard a line. I might be overstepping here, but a friend said a really funny line one time. she was like, you know what? Isn't it cool when the trash takes itself out?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay, Jason. He's just like, bye.
Yeah, him and Butch Walker. I don't know if you follow Butch at all. Butch is the same way. And then the one that was really, because I just, you don't think of it because you think of him still as the guy in the 80s with the love ballads. It's Richard Marx. Richard Marx does not mess around.
Well, you know, I have to believe that when they do that and they lose a handful, they gain like more focus from the people that were just kind of maybe watching them and maybe sort of fans. And now those people are really fans. Yeah. So I think it comes out in the wash.
No, I think so too. And I would love to have any of them. They're not going to hear this podcast, but if they did, any of those folks, I'd love to have you on. So it's very nice to meet you. I'm sorry that I couldn't have the video on, but I really appreciate the time and I really dig it. I hope you get to come to Kansas City.
I hope so too. Thank you. Yeah, it's very nice to meet you too. Or missed it by far. I love you, whatever we are. In the habit or up in the doze, two airplanes flying uncomfortably close. Leftover.
Maya Sharp, everybody. Again, the album is called Mercy Rising. It's out as of 2 days ago. Be sure to check it out. It's a beautiful album. I mean, this just kind of gives you, you know, this is one of the two songs she said that kind of would be a good starting point for you that she wanted you to listen to. It's just gorgeous. So thank you so much to Maya Sharp. And that's going to do it for this episode. But next time we're going back to my high school days, people. I have on the co-author of the book, Nothing But a Good Time, The Uncensored History of the 80s Hard Rock Explosion. Tom Bajor is going to be on, and we're going to talk all about this book. I read the book. I love the book. If you're a child, if you graduated from high school in the 1980s alone, you should read this book. If you love hard rock, you should read this book. If you love amazing stories, you should read this book. So Tom and I talked. It was supposed to be a 30-minute conversation, and it went for an hour because, you know, I geeked out. I geeked out. That's how I roll. I'm a Gen Xer, man. I want to talk about that kind of stuff a lot. So that's next time. Until then, go out and support live music, and we'll talk real soon. Bye-bye.